Let's see, we got two computer engineers here. Larry didn't like the small numbers of votes I got.
Should we all vote three times?
Well,
I didn't bother as we're...
Yeah, there's a bunch of computer engineers who probably, who didn't vote. Now, I guess we need to make sure that you guys really didn't want to vote because, there was, a number of people that... There were a couple of computer engineers who weren't there yesterday. And I don't see them here, Alex and... Trent. You were there, yeah. But at least I got you two guys. So you do need to take one double elective sometime, okay? So the possibilities are electronics 2, signals and systems, VLSI. Those are the ones that come along with no extra. I mean, they're just the next one in the sequence. Feedback and control, yeah.
I'm taking that right now.
Yeah. So you're pretty much done if you want to be. I mean, I think there's some you can swap between computer and electrical. So you could take, you could take digital control if that was what you wanted to do. The classes that were on that list that require two jumps are like communications, because you got to take signals and systems first and then communications, and prop and rad, because you got to take E&M, I think, is also another elective you guys can do. But then to do prop and rad, you'd have to take E&M and prop and rad. Let's see, what else is on the list?
Analog,
yeah, well, then you have to take electronics, too. You can take analog, so that's two away. What else was on there?
Communication systems.
Yeah, that was signals and then communication systems. So VLSI is the only one that's within, one jump, And I don't know whether either of you two, would either of you two take VLSI? You probably wouldn't, because you took feedback, right? Or you might. You might want to take VLSI instead of a computer class.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
I heard that it was a good continuation from digital design.
Yes, it is. Yeah, right. Yeah. I think the thing that you learn in VLSI, which is useful, is, I don't know, maybe you were doing this in digital design already. We're using VHDL or, okay. So, no, I guess that basically then, you're just doing the chip simulation kind of stuff, doing it basically an ASIC kind of design, a digital ASIC. So, do I add any votes on anything for you guys?
Well, if there's only one thing to vote on.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's only one thing to vote on. But if you aren't really planning on taking it, then I wouldn't vote on it, because...
Well, that's why I didn't vote yesterday.
Yeah, right.
I'm planning on graduating in June.
Right, yeah. So you... Well, I mean, this is... Oh, yeah, you're going to be gone, yeah. So then you don't need to worry about it. So anyway... Yeah. Daniel, you're a computer engineer, right? Larry didn't like the fact that there weren't very many computer engineer votes, so he was suspicious that perhaps, we didn't solicit enough votes. Because there was only five people that voted. The thing is, for computer engineers, you have to take one double elective. So that boils down to being either electronics 2 or feedback and control or electromagnetic fields or VLSI design. VLSI design was on the list.
Electronics 2,
yeah.
I would probably
or signals and systems.
I want to take analog.
Mm-hmm. But electronics 2 is your first step toward that.
Yeah.
It's essentially still analog. So, Have you figured out what you're going to take for your double E elective? Or?
I took two already.
You took two already. Okay, so you don't need any then. So then, let's see, who was the, it was Alex and Trevor who weren't there, right?
Trevor was there. Trevor was in law. He just didn't vote because he's also planning on graduating.
Okay. I thought Trevor, who was it that went home sick?
Travis.
Okay, Travis was there. Yeah, okay, I got Trevor and Travis mixed up. So Savard didn't vote because he wasn't really sure what he's still, got several years and he's not going to be ready for any of those next year probably. So basically it's, I want Travis and, Alex, I guess. I need to get a hold of those two guys. Okay, good. So we solved that issue. Okay. At least for the time being. No new data. Oops. Did I hit the wrong button? I was looking up. Okay, must have hit the wrong button. Okay. So we're going to leave op-amps now for the time being, and we're going to go to diodes. Okay, that's what we need to talk about today. And, as I was thinking about it, electrical engineers are sometimes just glorified plumbers, okay? And one of the things the plumber needs is a one-way valve. Like, current can go or flow can go this way, but it tries to go back down, the little thing flaps shut, and so diodes kind of play that role for double E's, okay? So, first thing I'd like to do is kind of explain a little bit about semiconductors because we're going to be working with semiconductors quite a bit. So you kind of got to have some kind of seat of the pants understanding of how a semiconductor works. And you'll actually get a much better understanding or at least a much deeper understanding by when you take physical electronics, which I think the double E's are required to take. I don't know, do the computers have to take it too? Okay. Sometimes I wonder about the way we set up the computer engineering program. I think it was mostly done by Larry and the computer science people. So they left out a lot of double E stuff and put in some weird stuff like, that probably isn't that applicable, but it is somewhat basic, So anyway, what we want to do is we want to understand semiconductors. And you guys kind of remember this, I hope, from chemistry. Remember there was these things called covalent bonds? And there's eight outer electrons in a shell. And when you had a situation like this, it was really chemically stable, and it was... it just didn't conduct any electricity because there's, all that you got to have a really high energy electron to get out of these, they're just, those electrons are held in there very, very nicely. So what happens is you'll take, a material like this, which is usually a column 4 material in the periodic table. You remember column 4? That's right in the middle. These kind of things like, for example, silicon is column 4, and germanium and so on. Those are column 4 elements, and they have this nice, you know, all the you know, electrons match up. And so they're, you know, better than column 3 or column 5 in some ways. So what happens is we'll take a material like this, and we will put just a little bit of impurities in here. Like, for example, maybe I will change this guy to be, you know, a column 3 dude, okay? And if you do that, wish I had another color here, but I guess I don't. I don't know. Anyway, so if you do that, notice there's a hole here. Okay? There's a place where an electron would fit very nicely, but it's not there. And you see, if this hole really kind of went with that nucleus, the nucleus is missing. It's just a tiny bit less plus, right, than the other one, right? It's missing one proton there. And the thing that happens here is this electron from this guy right here could swing over into that place right there with very little energy, okay? I mean, it's not quite, I mean, this you know, this column 3 element doesn't really fit in there nicely. It's not like it's in a low hole that, you know, it's hard to pull it. It just doesn't quite fit. And so the electron from one of these guys can swing over there, and he hardly feels like he's really in a it's almost as good as home, even though this guy has one proton less. You know, all the ones around him, that's only one thing, that's the one proton that's making a difference there. And it's not a really big deal for him to float around. And so when you put just one of these kind of guys in here, all of a sudden, you know, this electron can pop over here, and now the hole's over here, right? And once it's kind of a little bit away from that, then it's just as easy for that to hole to flow as can be, right? Because the next one over is, you know, it doesn't take hardly any bump to move him, you know, the next electron over into him. And as electrons move into the hole moves the other direction. Kind of like, a bubble in water, or, you know, a string of monkeys swinging through the trees. And, you know, there's one space, one gap in between. And so, you know, when that gap appears, then the next monkey jumps into that one, and the gap went over where he was before, right? And you kind of get the picture that, you know, this hole can move around. Now, that's one thing they do. And when they do that, they call this a P-type material. Yeah, this one's crummy. Let me try this. P-type. And it's now a semiconductor. I think I'm going to go for my good one here. Got to remember to restock that. Anyway, so this is a P-type semiconductor. And before, it was really an insulator, okay? Before there were any impurities in there, that column 4 material was basically real insulator. Yeah, just no conductivity. So it's because, you know, there's just no place for the current to flow. Everything is all in a stable position, and no electron wants to move from where it is to anywhere else. Because there's just no place to move, you know. I mean, it's kind of like the whole room was full of people here. You're not going to have a lot of traffic because, you know, in order to get up to get into a different seat, you got to push somebody else out of that. And when you push them out of that, they've got no place to go, you know. So it's kind of like that's the way it is. And similarly, we could take this thing and you know, do a, the same kind of deal, only instead of putting a column 3 in there, we put a column 5 in. And if you do that, then you got an extra electron here, right? And this would be an N-type material. And it's easy for this, you know, this guy's a little extra positive than the other ones, one proton more positive. But this guy isn't really bound but on one end, you know, so he can kind of move around a lot easier than the others. And so, you know, he can pop into over here and then over here, and that extra electron now all of a sudden becomes an electron available for conduction. And so this is also a semiconductor now. And, you know, the conductivity of both of these guys can be changed quite radically by the number of impurities you add per cubic centimeter. So if you put a whole lot of impurities, you're going to get, you know, really good conductivity. In fact, you know, almost as good as metal. In fact, a lot of the, you know, the semiconductors they use now, they don't even put metal on there to conduct the, you know, the current. They just dope it really heavily. It's called doping when you add that, you know, extra material there, column 5 or column 3. And if they dope it really heavily, it ends up being just about as good a conductor as, you know, as metal. So we've got these two kinds of conductors. And so those two kinds of conductors lead to some interesting effects when you put them next to one another, okay? If you put a P-type next to an N-type, let's just look at what happens. If I take a P-type semiconductor and I put it right up against an N-type semiconductor, and I put some wires on here like this, what's going to happen? If I put a voltage here, I'm going to call this voltage VD because this thing actually ends up being a diode. So I'm going to call that the voltage across the diode. And then there's a current that flows through here. I'm going to call that ID for the current in the diode. So let's just see what happens here. Here I have a bunch of holes over here in the P material, right? So those are the holes. And then over here I have a bunch of electrons. So, you know, these things are electrons. And these guys are holes. So if I put the voltage, the external voltage on like this, basically it creates a hill for the holes and the electrons. The holes are repelled from the top of the hill, from the plus side of the voltage source. They're repelled and they're going to go that way, right? Does that make sense? Because they're attracted to the negative side. So the holes, each one of these guys is going this way, right? Like that. And the electrons, on the other hand, they're going the opposite direction, right? So they go like this. This is for VD. I'm going to put greater than 0, okay? And, you know, as electron pops over here, it's quite likely that eventually he will run into a hole and recombine, right? But that's not a big deal because, remember, as the electron, and you know, as the electrons from the battery here, electrons from the battery are going this direction, right? An electron will pop out on this side right here, leaving a new hole, right? Which will then migrate across. And the electron that was in that hole will go down the wire and through the battery like this, right? Okay, and then eventually pop up back over here, right? And then, you know, float through the thing again. Does that make sense? Okay, so that's great. So we can see if VD is greater than 0, nothing unexpected happens. It just behaves like a semiconductor, right? I mean, just it conducts. It conducts. Okay, however, let's look at what happens in the other direction. This is kind of where the specialness comes. This is G, and this is N. Ah, if I could write. This is N. And I'm going to put VD on here. This time I'm going to put VD plus, minus, like that. But it's going to be less than zero. Okay? So this guy is the opposite polarity. So this means this is negative this time, and this is positive this time. Okay? Because VD is less than zero. So I put my electrons here. Right? And my holes over here. Okay, so now you're going to have to tell me, we're going to split this up. The guys in the room are going to be they'll be the electrons, and Hillary can be the hole, okay? So I want each of you guys to think which direction you're going to go, okay? So Hillary needs to think away which direction the holes go. You guys have to think about which direction the electrons go. So tell me, first of all, let the guys, because there's so many of you, which way are you going to go? I mean, and I'll just take whatever vote you take, and that's how many electrons go that way, right? You're going, so you guys are going that way? You guys are, man, so you're going this way, is that right, just like before? Oh, you're the electrons, right? Is that that's the way you want to go? Austin just turned around.
Wait, I thought we were the positive.
No, you guys are the electrons. Hillary gets to be the holes. You know, the ladies are always positive, and the guys are sometimes negative, right? So you guys are, which way are you going? You're going this way. We got Daniel here. He's going both ways. But most of them are going this way, right? Right? Okay, does that make sense? Now, what about you, Hillary? You're going that way. You're going that way?
He knows what's up.
Oh, man. I tell you. Well, I get a vote for all the other girls. They're going this way, too. Okay.
It's the only logical way to use the doors that way.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, this way over here, remember, this is highly negative, right? Because VD is less than zero, right? So this is downhill for holes. Going this way, and that way is downhill for electrons, right? So what happens is you end up with a region kind of right here. There's no carriers, either electrons or holes. It's called a depletion region. It's depleted of carriers. And a depletion region is an insulator. If there's no mailman, the post doesn't go through, right? And so this is interesting. We have a situation where it doesn't conduct, right? I mean, the current going this way, ID, is approximately zero. Now, it's not exactly zero, but it's probably like about 9 or 10 orders of magnitude less. Now, what really happens, it is impossible to make a pure P material, okay? Because, remember, any kind of little speck of dust or anything that gets in there is an impurity, right? And if you put an impurity in there of the wrong type, like if you put an electron, one with column five in there, then all of a sudden there's an electron in there. And so those are what we call minority carriers, okay? And so it's kind of like, in Africa, white people are a minority, okay? So in Africa, there are some things that white people, might do that are different than you know, ordinary Africans. And in this case, you know, an electron here would go that way, which would cause a current to flow, right? And a hole over here would cause a current to flow that way, if there were one, right? And so you do get a tiny little bit of current there, very little, but very little. And so the IV characteristic of this diode, by the way, here's, let me draw you pictures of a diode. Here's a, you know, a classical one with a lead on it. And they will put a band over here. And that band corresponds to the schematic diagram, which has a kind of a bar right here, and like this. And this is the way we call VD, and this is ID, and it current flows in the direction of the arrow, okay? But if you try to go back this way, it's blocked. That's what the bar means, okay? So it goes this way, but can't go that way, okay? And this bar and that little band on the diode correspond, okay? And on an LED, I can't remember, I think that one of the leads is longer, and I think it's the one with the bar, but I can't remember. I always have to check it. You know, you get your meter out, and you put your meter on there in diode mode, and it puts a little current through, and you can, you know, tell whether it's conducting this way or that way, it says. So I could put VD on here, too. So this is the schematic symbol for a diode. That's, you know, what, you know, one of those ones with leads looks like. And, you know, there's surface mount and all kinds of other things too, you know, different kinds of packages. But that gives you a little bit of an idea what it kind of looks like, a little cylinder most of the time. There's some of them up in the drawer. You'll be using some of those in lab next week. And the IV characteristic. Let's look at the IV characteristic here. So this is VD, this is ID, and it looks like this. I mean, I'm drawing this right underneath there, but it's this current right here. It's actually negative here, right? This is 0 volts. So this would be the current due to minority carriers. This is I0, and it's, you know, something like 10 to the minus 10th amps or something. Very, very, very small, okay? And it's usually a pretty constant number, and it depends on how clean the process was when they made the diode, how few minority carriers they were able to get in there, okay? And this thing kind of goes up exponentially here. And this is actually an important equation to learn. This is... Normally, I don't memorize equations, but the way you guys are doing this, you kind of need to do that in this class because you haven't had physical electronics, okay? In physical electronics, you'll derive this equation, and it's called the Shockley diode equation. But the reason we need to know it is because so many things in electronics are based on it. Anytime you have this kind of a PN junction, the Shockley diode equation comes into play because there's this kind of thing occurring here. Right? And so I just say, you know, memorize this equation. Normally, I never memorize equations. I always start from first principles and derive them every time. And you keep deriving them over and over and over again. After you've done it about 100 times, then you have it memorized anyway. But if you forget it anywhere, you know, maybe you've only done it 50 times and you kind of forget it, it's no problem because you've derived it 50 times already and it won't take you very long to derive it again and you'll get the answer in. And every time you derive it, it cements in better why it is, okay? And the why is usually the thing that gets you. If you don't know why it is and you just apply something, then you will miss something that's important and your gadget won't work, okay? At least that's what's happened to me. I mean, I can tell you some stories about some stuff like that I've done that just didn't turn out right, you know? Because I wasn't thinking about the why. So here's the equation. It's I0, that's this number right there, okay? And then it's e to the q vd over nkt minus 1, okay? So let's just look at this equation and see if it matches this picture very well. So if I'm back over here where VD is negative, if VD is negative, e to the minus some number is going to be a pretty small number. That's like 1 over e to something, which is, you know, e to some number gets pretty big, right? So 1 over e to something is pretty small. So this term vanishes over here, and you basically just get I0 times minus 1, which is kind of what I was saying there, and that basically comes from the minority carriers here. I0 is caused by the minority carriers. And there's a certain number of them, and that number limits the conductivity of this thing to get a certain amount of current through there. And it's just kind of like a current source. That's it. You know, you get that much. That's how many can go, because that's how many carriers you've got. And then over here, you notice it goes up exponentially. And this Q is the charge on an electron. Q is 1.602 times 10 to the minus 19th coulombs. The charge on an electron. K is Boltzmann's constant. What is it? 1.38 times something or other. Anyway, it's the Boltzmann constant. T is temperature in Kelvin. And what do you suppose N is? Well, that's a good guess. I mean, N is usually an integer. Yeah, but it'll be easy to find out. It's just a fudge factor. So N is a fudge factor. If I could write fudge factor here. It's a fudge factor, and it's approximately 1, okay? Depends on, and allows you to make it work for germanium or silicon or, you know, some of these various different ones. So, anyway, it's a fudge factor, approximately 1. And KT over Q, N is unitless. I should say this is unitless. KT over Q is approximately 0.027 volts, volts at room temperature. So there you've got it. So we get a stop at what, 40 after or something? Okay, so let's do an example problem here. I'm going to do a really simple problem, but the thing that's cool about this simple problem is because of Thevenin's theorem, it actually covers a gigantic amount of problems, okay? If you have one diode in your circuit and you make a and all the rest is linear, you can make a Thevenin equivalent out of the other stuff, right? And so suppose I have VS here, RS, those are the Thevenin things, and I've got this diode here. And this is VD and ID. And suppose I've measured this VI characteristic. Actually, that's one of the things, I don't know whether it's probably not next week's lab, but maybe the week after that or something. You're going to make what's known as a curve tracer, and in lab, and you will actually be measuring this IV characteristic. You know, you see it right there on your oscilloscope. Okay, so you could do that, and you know how to do that. You know, you just put a voltage across here, and I mean, you could do it with this circuit right here by just varying the VF here, right? And have a meter that measures the current and a voltmeter that measures the voltage and make plot, and you got it, right? So that's doable. That's easy. And so suppose we have a thing like that. And here it is. This is ED, and this is ID. Okay? So there's that equation. That's the equation of this guy. So basically what I'd like to do is I'd like to take the equation for this guy, which is just graphed here. We measured it experimentally. And I'd like to take the equation for this guy over here and find the intersection, because that will be the answer to my problem, right? Does that make sense? That's two equations and two unknowns. So I can write the equation for this guy right here. I'm just going to do a loop equation here. I could do a node equation if you want. It doesn't matter. I mean, do you want me to do node or loop? It doesn't matter either way. And maybe node is better because I've got I on the y-axis. So let's just do node. So if I look at here, I'm going to sum the currents out of that node right there, and I'm going to say I've got ID going out this way, right? And that equals, you guys like to do it this way, ID going out equals what's coming in, and that'll be VS minus VD, right, over RS, right? Did I do that right? Which I could rewrite in a nice way, minus 1 over RS times VD, because VD is the x-axis here, right? So ID and ID is the y-axis. And then I'll put plus VS over RS here, right? So suppose VS over RS was right here. This is the y-intercept, VS over RS, right? And then the slope is minus 1 over RS. And there's our solution right there, right? Now you can see if VS was negative, it would put me down here, right? And that slope would come back here and would intersect back here, and my current would be this tiny little bit here, right? Make sense? And over here, you know, it's this big amount. And this is called, this thing right here, that's called a load line. And this procedure that we used here is called load line analysis. And the reason it's the load line is, you know, this is like the source line right here, but they call this whole thing load line analysis. I mean, this is the if I think of that as the source, that's the line for the source, right?
So you plot that as a...
I plot this guy as a line, because that's a line, right? And they're right on top of this, and it's got a the VD and ID have to satisfy this IV characteristic, and they have to satisfy that one. So the only place that occurs is right there. Right? And actually finding this thing numerically is not as easy as, you know, you're used to finding things in circuits. If this was just a resistor here, you know, you just say, you know, VD equals R, I mean, ID over R, right? Or ID equals R, no, let's see. VD equals R ID, and then you just plug that in here, and, you know, that would be easy. But you have to plug this thing in there if you're going to do it analytically, right? Daniel.
It's more of a statement of what's happening as opposed to defining a component.
Well,
or function.
I haven't got an algebraic solution here. Let's just look at what we'd have to do to get that algebraic solution, right? So, here's one equation, and here's the other one, right? Make sense? And so what am I going to do here? Well, if I try algebra, this thing right here is ID, so I could just set this thing equal to that. So I'm just going to have I0 times e to the q vd over nkt minus 1 equals minus 1 over rs times vd plus vs over rs. Yeah, that's what's in the picture, but now all we got to do is use algebra to get VD on one side and the other stuff on the other, right? But this is what's known as a transcendental equation. It's not, easy to solve, right? What am I going to do here? If you want to think about this, well, let's see. I could put all the VD stuff over here, I could have I0 e to the VD, and I've got this thing right here. But I can't take log, because if I take log of that thing, then I've got log of this, this exponential plus some BD. That didn't help, right? You got any other ideas? Well, yeah, Wolfram Alpha. You can try it. Go ahead and try it. They would still use a numerical method, right? You can grab all this stuff and say something equals 0, right? And then you can use interval halving, right? I just guess it's here. Oh, well, it ended up being positive there. I guess it was over here, and it's negative over here. So I know it crossed 0 somewhere, right? So then I cut my interval in half and try again, and I keep doing that, and I get one bit closer every time, right? You can just start trying values, right? It's kind of like, you guys have probably seen, this thing. For example, if I say x equals sine of x, okay? Well, okay, so I take arc sine of that. So that says x equals arc sine of x, right? Well, that didn't help. If you just start guessing things, you can probably guess something, right? And especially if you think about the graph. Right? You can say, well, probably 0 would work, right? Does that make sense? Because sine of 0 is 0, and x equals 0 is 0, so that works. But, that may not be the only solution, you'd probably need to graph it, Non-polynomial equations suck. Yeah. What this does is this means that this graphical solution is more valuable to you than you thought, right? Because that graphical solution is all of a sudden, normally you wouldn't bother with that, but, well, that might be the best thing we got. So, anyway, have a good Friday and a good Sabbath, and I'll see you on Monday.